think about starting, ladies and gentlemen. The son. They were here yesterday. Well, let me welcome you here today. My name is Tom Berger, and this is the Alaska Native Review Commission. I've been traveling throughout Alaska to consider the impact of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971, and I've been to 60 villages and towns throughout Alaska. We've been traveling for a year in every region of Alaska, and so far we've heard from more than 1,400 Alaska Natives and other Alaskans who've testified at the hearings in Alaska. And when we were traveling in southeast Alaska and in the Chugach region and in the Aleutians, they said, well, you should hold a hearing down in Seattle because there's a lot of Alaska Natives living in Seattle. So we thought we would spend yesterday and today holding a hearing here in Seattle. And and this is the last hearing that we'll be holding, and so we're eager to give you an opportunity of letting us have your views about the land claim settlement of 1971. Here it is 14 years later. How has it worked out? We'd like you to give us the good side and the bad side. What benefits did you get out of it? Did you get any job with the corporations, the native corporations? Did you get any dividends? What do you make of it all now, 14 years later? In Alaska, people have told us they're really concerned that they could lose the land. The way Congress set up the settlement, the land and the money were turned over to Native corporations, and Native people were given shares in these corporations. The land is a corporate asset, and that means that if corporations go bankrupt, the land could be lost. After 1991, when the shares go on the market, the corporations can be taken over by outside corporations. And the land could be lost in that way. And of course, in the 1990s, all the land can be taxed by the state of Alaska, and even a modest tax on the 44 million acres of land that Alaska Natives hold in Alaska could result in a liability for taxes that many corporations couldn't meet, and they could lose their land for default of payment of taxes. Well, those are some of the dangers. People in Alaska are worried about those things and have talked about what they might do. Some have said, well, let's restrict the sale of shares so that after 1991, people who hold shares in the Native corporations can't sell their shares. Well, what do you think of that? Have you been waiting until after 1991 to sell your shares so you get something out of this? Well, that's what I'm interested in hearing one way or the other. Some people have said, no, if we sell our shares, then outsiders will take over our corporations. They'll own our land, and we won't be able to hunt and fish and trap on it anymore. And our villages in Alaska will really be in a bad way. Others have said, well, maybe there's a way of settling this. Maybe we should just say that if you want to sell your shares, you can sell them, but you can only sell them back to your own corporation. Now, that raises the problem whether or not the corporation would have enough money to buy the shares. So none of these answers seem, none of these answers are really all that easy to work out, but I'd sure like to have your feelings on the subject. Some people in Alaska have said, well, if our paramount concern is the land, maybe we should transfer the land from the corporations, take the land from the corporations and put it in the tribal governments, the IRA governments or the tribal councils, the traditional councils, and it'll be safe there for future generations. Well, as regards the future generations, they didn't get any shares. I think you know that the people that got shares were Alaska Natives who were living on December 18th, 1971, and if a child was born the next day, let us say 12:01 a.m. on December 19th, 1971, well, that was 1 minute too late. And children born since 1971 have no right to be enrolled as shareholders. And some people in Alaska say, well, look, let's give shares to all those children. They're entitled to shares. They're our children. They shouldn't have to wait until we die to get our shares by inheritance. Are they natives or are they not natives? Other native people have said, well, wait a minute. If we give shares to all these children born since 1971, that'll dilute the value of our shares. They won't be worth as much. So these are all pretty tough questions, and we would like to know how you feel about them. Now, I'm not here representing the government of the United States, and I don't represent the state of Alaska. I've been appointed to do this job by the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, which is an international organization of Eskimos from Alaska, Canada, and Greenland, and by the World Council of Indigenous People, which is an international organization of Indians around the world. I'm going to write a report based on all that I've heard in Alaska and what you tell me here in Seattle, and my report will be coming out in September, and in it I'll make my recommendations about the land claim settlement based on what you've told me. I'll make recommendations that I hope will be useful to Alaska Natives in charting their future, and I hope it will be useful as well to Native people in other countries who are settling their land claims now, so they can learn from what was achieved in the land claim settlement in Alaska, and they can learn from the mistakes that were made. Now, if you would like to testify, I hope you don't mind just coming up and sitting here beside me at this microphone. The reason is that all that you say can go on the tape there that Jim Sykes with the headphones has got, and he's taking down on tape everything that is said, and then a transcript is prepared so that there is a permanent record of what is said at these hearings, and my report will be based on what people have told me at these hearings. I've been traveling for a year. I've held 60 hearings in Alaska and every region all over the state. And I'm holding this hearing in Seattle so that Alaska Natives living down here will have a chance to say their piece too. Now, we had a meeting here yesterday that was very good. We had a good turnout, and about 40 people testified, which I thought was quite good, and we learned a lot. We're here today. We'll be here this morning, and we'll take a break for lunch, and then we'll come back, and we'll carry on this afternoon. But there won't be a hearing tonight. There's a dance here at the hall tonight, so you can't go to a hearing tonight, but you can go to the dance. So we're all ready, open for business, and if you'd like to say something, just step right up. We're quite informal, and yes, ma'am.
You'll have to excuse me. I
can't hear
too well.
Oh, that's all right.
My name is Julia Barnes DeMott, and I'm a director for the EAC Corporation. I've been involved with Chugach and the EAC Corporation for, I think, from the time that it began. I'm very concerned about many things. I don't know, maybe some of you have read an article in the Anchorage paper where they called me a 50-ish fast-talking grandmother. Well, maybe I am, I don't know. And as a director and a shareholder, I am very concerned about our lands and where we are going to go from here. In the 10 years that I have been a director for the Chugach and Eyak Corporation, I have fought very hard for our shareholders, not only for Eyak Chugach, but others too. And I see managers getting richer, consultants getting richer while we're getting poorer and land poor. For instance, one was, you probably people have heard about the Canoe Pass there in the Prince William Sound. While I was away fishing, my brother and I, Cecil Barnes, they pulled a fast one on us. They went and sold properties there at Canoe Pass to the doctors and lawyers, and that's our hunting grounds. That's for everybody there. It's the best Sitka deer that we have around there, and it's our hunting grounds. Okay, for instance, in joint ventures, and I'll go into that, has steadily have drained off our money. Our current day-to-day data costs, including continuous losses on corporate business and greatly excessive consulting fees and attorney fees, like I said before, who are getting richer and we're getting poorer. I have seen jobs created for non-natives and wages being paid out. For example, one manager I figured out was making a little over $100,000 a year for 60 hours of work put in a month, and after that, $50 an hour. And you figure that out. That's for 325 people. My goodness sakes, the governor of Alaska, isn't that what he makes? Now this man has worked for different corporations or whatever. Now he owns, I just found out the other day, he owns a furniture store there in Anchorage because he's getting rich off of us. Another deal here. Under ANSCA law, monies cannot be appropriated for political purposes. However, I wrote to the Secretary of Interior stating that, Assistant Secretary of Interior stating that a president of the corporation had used funds to fly 9 or 10 of his friends to Juneau for a $100 plate political dinner. And a letter back from the Assistant Secretary of Interior, I was told that this party had apologized. That was the end of it. So they condoned the act of violating the law. Apparently, Washington, D.C. would like to see the land claims go under by deliberately ignoring legitimate protests from shareholders against such flagrant law breaking. In my 10 years as an officer, I have seen many discrepancies in business management. I have seen money thrown down the drain, but what can I do? Or any of us, when Washington, D.C. turns their head at such acts? Corporations are covered by attorneys as a matter of legal course, while shareholders have no one to protect them. In due process, I had written to the shareholders and asked their permission to get an attorney for them to cover them, to represent the shareholders, to protect their rights, because lands were being sold, traded off in lieu of pay, or in some cases, credits which allow corporate lands earned in lieu of fees. The Burgess Commission, which is now hearing Native concerns about ANSCA's working, has reported that the loss of Native lands is a major concern among the Natives through Alaska. It doesn't seem right. Why is it that we don't have a federal audit of our corporate books, which we are entitled to? I have asked the Chugach Corporation, written to them, had it, but went and hired a lawyer and asked for the addressees of the shareholders so I could write to them and possibly get a third or more from these people to ask for a federal audit, which is our right under ANSCA. They wouldn't give it to me. 5 years or more I have asked for these addressees and never received them. What are they afraid of? That is my question. What are they afraid of? If they were in the up and up, they wouldn't have to be afraid. If IRS came and audit me today, I don't have to be afraid because I don't think I've broken the law. Not intentionally. Education. I have fought for education for our children. That's our next generation that's going to be running the corporations. What do we get? I got like $500 for our kids, for education. It seems like every time I'd get up and I'd ask these things from different corporations or whatever, it seems like they want to just push me aside. They call me the loudmouth, troublemaker. They call me a native activist. A lot of my people don't realize what an activist is. They think it's a troublemaker. No, it isn't. It covers a lot of things. An activist is a person that fights for their rights, fights for their cause, fights for everything they think is right for us. You know, my brother Cecil Barnes, he's dead now, but he envisioned when he started the EAC Village Corporation, which people thought couldn't be done. He did it, right? We're a village within a city. Now I see all this hard work that he put into it. What are they doing? They're selling our land to pay managers, pay consultants that give us the wrong answers, the wrong directions. Where are we going to go from here? What are we going to do? It just hurts me to see all this happening. And also, it has broke us people apart. The land claims, I don't know, what has it done to us? You know, people that were close, families, brothers hate each other, fighting among themselves. What is the answer to all this? I don't know. Maybe you people have it. You know, I don't know if any of you here recall, but I was instrumental and putting a halt to the EAC Mall project, which would have cost us approximately $2.7 million. Money has already been wasted on such potential investments, only to wind up, like I said before, creating needless salaries for non-shareholders. What are we going to do? Put up our lands to hawk to create these jobs for non-shareholders and potential investments? When there are no foreseeable dividends? You know, that mall was going to go in to Cordova, Alaska in the wintertime. There's like 800 or 900 people there. Can you imagine a $3 million mall going into a village? You know what they were going to do? They were going to take everything we had, our lands, our assets, and use them for collateral. I fought it and won by just one vote. Thank God. Otherwise, we wouldn't own any land. We wouldn't own anything, the EAC shareholders. There's so much I would like to say, but I'll tell you right now, you people better think. Because when 1991 comes, if this keeps on going, we might not have nothing left. I wish I could say, I could be here all day to tell you as a director what I have been through, what I have seen. And I hope that all of you here will think about this and try to figure out where we're going to go from now on, because our children, our children's children. I'd like to see land put in a bank, maybe. I don't know what I've asked about it, you know, maybe some type of a deal that where we can put land away for a future generation so they'll have something. And I'd like to see land given to our shareholders, too. There's lands have been taken away from them in the past in one way or the other. And I'd like to see us have land. I took some land that I fought for. I fought for 2 acres for the EAC shareholders. I took that land and I borrowed monies on it to get a permit. And those are some of the things that we can do. We don't have to sell our land. If some of you want to go into a business or whatever, we have that land to use as collateral. Why let the corporations use all our land and take it away from us? Why not you? Why don't you get some land? I'd like to see the 13 region too. I'd like to see these people get land. Because that's their heritage up there, whether they live down here or not. We have a lot of land up there. Why is everybody so stingy with it? Give these people land too here. I'd like to see that. We're land rich. I'd like to see them get land instead of having to go back to D.C. because they're laughing all the way home down there. They're having to bawl because that's exactly what they're figuring down there, that we're going to lose it anyway. I thank you very much.
Could I just ask a question, Mrs. DeMott? The land, the property at Canoe Pass that was sold, by the EAC Village Corporation.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I think there's a question here by Mrs. Hyatt.
Pardon me, I can't.
Oh, there's a question here. Just if you could stay just a second.
Yes.
You're a good source, so we're going to...
I can't hear you too well. I have... please.
You're a good source, so we're going to ask you some questions.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm from Sea Alaska, Maryland Heights. And we're quite interested in the land problem, too. And I would like to know, and maybe the rest of them, is how are they transferring title to these lands? Because at this time, they aren't supposed to be able to.
Well,
I can't hear.
Yeah. Maybe I could answer.
I am so sorry. I have an ear infection right now.
Okay.
I can't. Could you come up here so I could answer that?
Well,
try to, anyway.
Maybe I could just, let me deal with that.
Okay.
The question was, how are they able to sell land because you're not supposed to be able to sell it? Well, you can sell the land. The corporations can sell the land. They can mortgage it. They can do what they want with it. What you can't sell is your shares. That's the difference.
Oh, I thought there was a prohibition on transferring property. There isn't.
No.
Thank you.
I wish I could be here. As a director, I'll probably get a lot of flack now when I go back, but I don't give a damn because I'll tell you why. I've been fighting for you people for so damn long. Now I'm used to it. I thank you very much.
Thanks, Mrs. DeMont.
Yes, my name is Rusty Axtell. I'm from Sea Alaska. And the question I have is that the land title that is now held by the corporations, when the 1991 comes around, are we going to share in a land distribution? Is there going to be a divide for this? Or what is the consensus of the opinion?
Well, the land that the 44 million acres was turned over to the native corporations. It's a corporate asset. Now, in 1991, what happens is that the shares that you hold You have shares in one of the native corporations, I guess. You can sell them. And if somebody wants to buy them, if Exxon wants to buy them because they think the land the corporation has may be oil-bearing land, or if somebody else wants to buy the corporation, then they'll ask you to sell them your shares. But the life of the corporation will go on. And only if a corporation is liquidated, goes into liquidation, will the assets be divided up and shared among the shareholders. But 1991 doesn't mean that the corporation will be liquidated and all the assets, all the land divided up among the shareholders. In fact, the only likelihood of liquidation is usually because of failure. In other words, it's only a corporation that's doing very, very badly, that is deeply in debt, that might be liquidated and wound up. But then the assets would be used to pay the creditors, and there wouldn't be anything left for the shareholders. So 1991 doesn't mean that you will get piece of land and it doesn't mean that the corporations will simply take all their assets and divide them up among the shareholders. What it does mean, as things now stand, is that if you've got shares, you could go down to a brokerage house here in Seattle and say, will you give me for these shares? I want to sell them. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem with that is that many Alaska Natives living in those villages say, hey, we don't want to see those shares sold, because whoever accumulates a big enough block of shares is going to own the corporation and own the land.
Right.
So that's the dilemma.
Okay. Well, if the corporations are on a unstable basis now, I can see the liquidation of our properties and the loss of it in the near future. The thing that I would like to see is that what lands is entitled to the people by the time 1991 comes around, to set it up in a non-taxable state so that we do not lose control over liquidation processes. I would like to see our lands set in the receivership of the village community to stop any bi-parties or tri-party ownership, so that each individual village has total control over what appropriated lands is due them, and let them handle their own in-house control. But I feel that our parent corporations,
the regional corporations,
do not have adequate control through upper management to mid-management decisions to enact a reasonable division for each community, let alone each shareholder. I'm not registered at any village in particular in Southeastern, but I still would like to see the village corporations get control. And I think this would be pretty much throughout the rest of the interior.
Yeah, well, that's what people in the villages want.
Yes. Well, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Axtell.
My name is Terry Barraquet. I'm going to have to excuse me, my voice is going, so I'll say what I have to say. In 1984, we met with, at that time, Mr. Malott and the administration from OBSI. As shareholders of Sea Alaska.
Ocean Beauty?
Yes, of Ocean Beauty.
A subsidiary of Sea Alaska.
Yes, the one that's in Seattle. As shareholder of Seattle, we wanted to designate on our corporations here, not up north, the corporations that we had more access to. At that time, we met with Mr. Malott and the administration from Ocean Beauty. And we also questioned the high salaries that were given to non-Native Americans. Mr. Horgan receiving $170,000 annually, more than our governor here.
This is in Ocean Beauty.
This is in Ocean Beauty, along with many of the other members. We questioned that at the time, and we were called dissidents. At that time, Mr. Malott walked out of our meeting, unable to answer a lot of the questions. One of the main concerns that I had at that time was employment. For Ocean Beauty and ABC Brick didn't give any benefits to shareholders at all. Every time you call the personnel office, you're referred to a Mr. Everson, who is director of personnel. During that meeting, we met with him and were concerned with his area. We found out that he had no authority to hire. He just referred people. We also found out he failed to recruit in any of our areas for shareholders available for jobs. At that time, we were promised by Mr. Antioquia that we were to have personnel policies to cover this area that he knew was in trouble. In September, they had an annual meeting in Juneau. He did come out with personnel policies, he said, was an answer to our problem. He issued to the SAC committee a copy of the personnel policies, and in looking it over, the personnel policies does cover Sea Alaska, but it does not extend itself to Ocean Beauty. So he did not answer our question. In other words, he left it as it was, that Ocean Beauty had no personnel policy and that only those non-Native Americans were in charge of hiring. This is the similar answer that we've had every time we've zeroed in on any area. Okay. We are also concerned in why shareholders down here in Seattle have not benefited in any way, have not been answered. They have, at that time, in 1978, I think, we came out with a SAC committee. And the SAC committee was another answer to the shareholders' cry for any kind of participation in Sea Alaska. What it was to be, at every meeting, there was a lot of complaints about people who wrote in to Mr. Malott, who wrote in to administration, complaining about unemployment, complaining about education, complaining about benefits not issued to shareholders. At this time, the SAC committee was supposed to be a go-between between the shareholders and the people who was to receive the complaints. The SAC committee at that time was introduced to us with certain members, I think it's 13 members. During that time, this is how the SAC committee operates.
Could you tell us what SAC means?
Shareholder Advisory Committee. And that was to benefit the shareholders. In talking with the SAC committee, the shareholder committee, and in writing to Richard Stitt and Marlene Johnson, who at that time was chairman of the board, I inquired on how one could get on the SAC committee so that we could be heard. Evidently, the people on the SAC committee had no connection with shareholders. They did not make themselves available. They did not recruit. They did not give us information about personnel activity. They did not give us any information pertaining to shareholder benefits. And this is what happens in your SAC committee. They are given duplicate reports about logging in Alaska, about fisheries in Alaska. And this is our SAC committee in Seattle. We are interested in logging and fishing in Alaska, but we are more interested in our benefits that are available to us here. We did not get any benefit from that SAC committee. So in turn, I wrote Mr. Richard Stitt and Marlene Johnson to find out what they could do about our personnel policies and our personnel activity down here. I wrote in September, and I also talked with Richard Stitt. I did not get an answer until February of 1985. My question was why Mr. Mamat had to okay the every SAC committee that was accepted, every SAC committee member. In other words, you or I, if we wanted to get on the SAC committee to express our feelings, we would have to be voted in by the SAC committee and also okayed by Mr. Mamat. So in other words, if you were to be one who was a dissident or an activist, like the lady said, you weren't going to get on this committee. This committee is a dormant committee. What they want is someone who receives reports, have nothing to do with shareholders, and that's it. They fill out reports to Mamat. I applied for the position, and Marlene Johnson answered to me. Since then, she has been taken off as chairman of the board because she answered to me. I received a response from Richard Stitt, who just only told me, because I had written up and I had given them a whole thing on personnel, how I thought. They told me, if you complain so much, give us a spread on how you would like personnel to be run, how you would like the shareholders to get benefits. What do you think could be done? And I did. I sent up a 6-page report. And I sent a copy to every board member and a copy to every SAC committee member. Since then, they have told me that I am not going to be accepted on the SAC committee. Every other person that has applied, as long as you do not voice your opinion, you're accepted on that committee. And this is the kind of things that I'm concerned about. So we are activists and we're labeled dissidents. So we picket in front of OBSI and we voice our concerns. We are not the people that are going to be hired. In other words, I have gone down to OBSI to talk to Mr. Everson, and suddenly he's not available because of our confrontation. If you confront these people verbally, you do not get an opening within any position. We're not talking about administrative positions. We're talking about line positions and canneries. We're talking about secretarial positions. We're talking about simple things like recruiting in our own area. We're talking about applications that are not received here in Seattle and maintained in Seattle. We're talking about applications that are brought into OBSI and sent to Juneau and lost in Juneau. I've had 3 applications lost. Why? Why don't they want to even hear about our skills? Why don't they hire us? I think every one of us have applied. The response to that is that the hiring is the foreman's, and every foreman down there is non-shareholder. The concerns that I have are more than salaries of the administration. It's non-salaried shareholders. It's information that's not given at the Sea Alaska office here in Ballard. We are spending more money on that ocean beauty, on our building out there, Sea Alaska building out by the locks. That building, we are losing over $80,000 a month. And Mr. Andy Okwia, he admitted this. But he says he's going to lose more money by opening it up to Native American corporations to reside there. Right now, we can have our own corporations in there to attract other businesses. But we have an empty building that is losing annually. Every company that they buy up, we buy up with everything that goes with it. I don't think many of you remember when Mr. Borbridge was found out doing illegal things within our corporation. It was so silent. It was a very little deal in the newspaper saying Borbridge was let off. No one knew how that happened. Mr. Mamat did not explain to the shareholders what he was doing. And I read a transcript to that investigation, and I was shocked. And in Washington, where the government turned their face on that, they should have known when Borbridge was let out that there was an investigation. Now, whoever heard of an investigation done by the board of that corporation when this involved millions of dollars? The investigation was done by Judson Brown. what that time was on our board. The people meeting in those hotels, making all those wrong decisions, giving illegal checks, included Mr. Mamat and Roger Lang. Now, we all wondered why our board does not move and get rid of people who do not function. We all know that Roger Lang was sick for almost a year. And why did Mr. Mamat nurse him on? Because he knows what's going on in there. If a board member is sick and cannot operate, then we have to have something in our policy that says get him off. Because this is a million-dollar corporation, and we don't need people nursing other board members on because they're their relatives or they're their friends. We have many people who are eligible here. All we need is to give us a chance and give us a board that is workable, not those that have their hands in each other's pockets, who are nursing along little innuendos, little secrets that they keep. I don't think that people know that we investigated ourselves. We are the laughing stock of every corporation. We're one of the biggest corporations, and I was shocked to hear that. But to have a corporation, now we all know when we work in any business, if there's something wrong in their audits, if there's something wrongdoing going, we do not investigate ourselves. The government should have stepped in. They should have frozen everything and investigated our corporation. We did not ask the government to set us up for failure. We also didn't ask them to set up a board that would fail for us. Now, we've all made our votes for the board. And we all know that whoever we get on the board, it's not enough to get Milan out because he has a controlling hand. Sure, there are power struggles right within our board. And every year that they spend hundreds and millions of dollars to get themselves onto the board, we are losing millions of dollars in our failing corporation. They're not looking for us to win. They're going to line their pockets, and we're going to be the losers.
Yeah, well, just, you know, I'm really interested in the question of what do people think about the land claim settlement, whether or not you think the shares should go on the market after 1991. Kind of going into the allegations of mismanagement isn't really my function. I can't do anything about those allegations. Those have to go to the courts or wherever. And so it doesn't really help me to just say that a whole lot of people have been lining their pockets and so on. Those are really unsubstantiated allegations that I can't deal with.
Well, I'd
really like you to tell me what you think about the future of ANCS. In other words, after 1991, I mean, you may be elected to the board, you know, there may be more battles within Sea Alaska, but would you like to be able to sell your shares? Do you think children born since 1971 should be given shares, or should they be told, no, you just wait for somebody to leave you their shares in their will? Those are the things that really interest me.
Okay, then if we're talking about the future and we're talking about 1991, I think it's important to talk about what's happening right now because we're not going to have anything left in 1991. We're talking about a corporation that's going to last until 1991 or after for our children and for us. I don't think right now we're even looking at something for us at the rate that we're going. We're looking at a nucleus of people who are going to survive. We're not going to survive. And after 1991, I think if we look at the management now, then we can figure out what we're going to do in 1991. Unless we look at ourselves carefully, and that means looking at the management, there's no way that you can get a good answer from a shareholder about how we're going to exist after 1991. Right now, we're so unbenefited and we're so frustrated and we're so disgusted that 1991, we will all sell for what we got, which is barely nothing. Everything of our land, when you talk about land, it sounds good, but it's all owned by the bank through loans. By the time the bank eats us up in 1991, people, we don't have nothing left. So why should we worry about 1991 unless we look at those people that's handling us now? The government wants us to look at long-range goals. They gave us the money. They set us up. Now let them intervene so that we'll have something left in 1991.
Okay, I think that the point that is made is a good one, in that the land. I think Mrs. DeMott said earlier, what about a land bank? And that ties in with what the last speaker, Ms. Berquit, said. One of the proposals that has been made is for a land bank. That is, the corporation would be allowed to deposit its land in a land bank, and then while the land is in the land bank, it can't be seized for bad debts or for taxes, and thus people would keep their land. One of the problems with that is that the land goes into the land bank, but it can be withdrawn. So if your corporation were to go into bankruptcy, and I appreciate the point that the last speaker was making, that, you know, maybe there won't be anything left in 1991. I haven't overlooked that. And that's a point I've made yesterday when I spoke to the folks that were here. That is, that you can lose your land if your corporation goes bankrupt. And even if you put the land in the land bank, it's in the land bank, but when your corporation goes bankrupt, the trustee in bankruptcy may decide not to renew the deposit of land in the land bank, or he may